I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And welcome down another trip down memory lane here on the Wrestling Retro Review podcast series here on the Barber's Chair Network. I'm Chris Novak, joined, of course, by my co-host on the Ruthless Aggression podcast, Robert O'Neill, and our co-host here for these retro reviews, Chris Osborne. Rob, Chris, how are y'all doing tonight?
Not too bad.
Yeah, no, I'm doing pretty well, too. You know, it's rare that we're in two separate locations, but, you know, we're going to make it work here.
Yeah, all three of us are in separate locations here in the Midwest. Very rarely you see that. But such is life right now, such is the case. And today for our retro reviews, we're going back to a very pivotal time in the wrestling industry. One of the more significant moments of the Attitude Era and the Monday Night War. This being the two shows, the one Raw that finally beat Nitro in the ratings on April the 13th, 1998. And then we are taking a look back at Nitro's response the ensuing week on April the 20th, the night after Spring Stampede 1998. So once again, like we said, so we're not going over Nitro on April 13th and we're not going over Raw on April 20th. We are going over the Raw that beat Nitro and then the Nitro that attempted to respond to that rating and oh, I guess you could see what they had in concept, but in practice, we'll get to that in just a little bit.
Yeah, and I didn't actually look it up. Like, did Nitro end up, like, being competitive with the April 20th show, or do we know? Because I don't...
I definitely didn't check, but I can find that out.
Well, because I don't think...
Let's see.
I don't think they ever, like, won again, right? I know after the Mick Foley thing, obviously, they never won again after that, but... Was it like back and forth, neck and neck throughout the summer? Because I imagine the Goldberg Hogan show did pretty well, right?
I think it was.
Obviously, it's still like a turning point because this is the first time WWF beats them since I believe the last one was when Kevin Nash debuted.
I think so.
And then from there, WCW just won every week. But yeah, but still, it's a big turning point because, you know, of what will ultimately end up happening.
Yeah, in fact, Nitro actually did beat Raw in the ratings that night on April the 20th.
Okay.
But yeah, it was pretty neck and neck. Raw won the 27th, the 4th. They tied on the 11th. They won on the 18th, tied again. Raw won for 6 consecutive weeks until July 6th, of course, the Nitro, where Goldberg won the world title. Raw won the next 4 weeks. Nitro then won 3 weeks in August, then another week in September. For whatever reason, Raw's ratings were preempted because of the U.S. Open in August and early September of 1998. Then after the October 26th episode of Nitro and Raw went on a run that would pretty much end it. Nitro would never beat them after that.
Yeah, and it looks like that April 20th Raw also was taped and not very good. So, like,
I watched it. It was okay. I enjoyed it for what it was, but yeah, it was definitely taped.
Yeah, because it doesn't look, I mean, Austin doesn't have a match, so no, I'm sure he's on the show quite a bit, but
yeah,
you know, but yeah, no, really an interesting time, you know, coming off the heels of, you know, WrestleMania 14, which is pretty pivotal too, because Mike Tyson gets involved, obviously, you know, Shawn Michaels isn't around for the next 4.5 years.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a week after DX, or 2 weeks after DX comes to be, like, or the new iteration of D-Generation X.
Because that was, because 2 weeks prior was the show after WrestleMania.
Yeah, when the Outlaws joined X-Pac, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and we actually, that's where we're actually starting with the Observer. You know, we talked a lot about Sean Waltman being fired by WCW, I think, on the Uncensored 1998 podcast we did, which there's a lot of overlap there, so I didn't include a lot of stuff because you can go back and listen to that. But, yeah, I mean, Waltman coming in was big because obviously he had familiarity with them and, you know, they were able to get him on TV right away and be like almost shooting on Bischoff a little bit, Bischoff and Hogan, and I think that really helped him out too.
Yeah, and it's also a big name from WCW to WWF, whereas it's usually been WWF to WCW. Because, yep, I mean, even just, like the, yeah.
And you had just seen that with Rick Rude, and then I think Bulldog moved at some point in the last few months, if I recall.
Yeah, that's recent, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Bret Hart's over there.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
six months there, you know, so.
Yes, yes,
of course. More than just signing Waltman sent a major message throughout the industry that WWF was willing to pay what had become market value for top talent rather than publicly cry during a period of economic boom about the amounts of money their competition was throwing around. So, yeah, I mean, they were pretty much, you know, set on bringing Waltman in. And his first night in there, he did the, you know, shoot about how, you know, Hogan and Bischoff are so tied together, and Hall and Nash would be there, too, if they were able to be. pretty famous stuff. I mean,
yeah. I do find that interesting, though, from Dave saying that, like, that now they're willing to, because, I mean, they paid, Marrow had guaranteed money. I mean, I would assume that he had close to market value of that. I mean, it's not like it's totally new, and Marrow was in a year and a half, 2 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah, because Mark Marrow is really, like, their first big contract that everyone uses an example of, so.
Yeah, yeah, because he's, like, right after Foley and Austin come in, and Foley and Austin don't have guaranteed deals, which is mind-boggling.
Yeah,
but. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing is, by immediately featuring him, it sends a message to the other smaller wrestlers that are getting unhappy at WCW that, you know, you can be used better in WWF, which, you know, we talked all about that too in the when the Radicals came in, where they are, I guess, used better right away, maybe not entirely, but
and Jericho when he comes in the next year. I mean, he's presented way better than he would be in WCW.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting with Jericho because they made him like a big deal while also not making him a big deal, kind of like the first Undisputed title thing ends up, you know, with just him losing to Triple H in a feud that it's mostly just Triple H against Stephanie instead. But, you know, all in all, I think, you know, he did better in WWF than WCW. But yeah, it's interesting, like you said too, that we finally get someone kind of jumping the opposite direction.
Yeah, and somebody of significance and somebody that like had been there already too. It's interesting that coming back into the fold where he wasn't too well received, or you know, he was not the most liked guy in the locker room when he left too.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Dave goes on to say that it's time for the wrestlers to unionize for a bunch of reasons. So that's a conversation we've been having for, you know, at that point, probably 10 years. And since then, you know, the 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, probably like, yeah, at least 13 years probably since Hogan and Ventura.
Yeah. Bischoff spoke to the wrestlers recently in an apparent attempt to have a reason for Waltman being fired and basically said that, you know, if you have a long-term injury, you might let go. Which, after Pillman died, which is like 6 months before it at this point, he said no one would ever be fired for taking time off for a legitimate injury or going to rehab. So, you know, things are changing pretty quickly, I guess. They're going to start doing a Nitro Plus sort of thing, which the Monday after every pay-per-view, you can pay an extra $5 and you can see what happens during the commercial breaks, which nothing ever happens during commercial breaks. No. I mean, we see it on NXT and AEW right now, where they insist on doing the picture in picture and it just nothing happens. And I mean, like, the this one was interesting too, because that WCW Deep Cuts Twitter has some like promos and stuff from it sometimes, and it's just guys that clearly don't want to be doing it. And then here's one that I had never heard before. There's talk of bringing back Ric Flair and introducing a new Four Horsemen with Arn Anderson as a spokesman and Bill Goldberg as one of the members to put Goldberg in the spotlight but hide his weaknesses like they did with Lex Luger originally. Which, I don't know. I mean, you know, Goldberg will obviously be fine in the next few months. So it's like, it works out for him, but they ended up really not having anything more to do with Flair, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Flair relationship isn't that great.
Well, no, because it's not. Because when they were supposed to, I think, get this whole thing started was when he missed the show for the wrestling tournament, which, depending on who you listen to, he gave them plenty of notice that he was going to miss the show, but maybe he didn't. And yeah, so that becomes a whole thing where Ric Flair is exploring leaving WCW, but ultimately doesn't. Which, I mean, that would have been a big one too, even in 1998, if Flair was going to be able to jump, because, you know, you look at how they presented him when he did finally jump, they made him a big deal, and they probably would have done it in 1998 as well.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Because Flair and McMahon's relationship is so interesting. All the stories.
Well, I mean, yeah, even just the first run where he pretty much just lets him leave where, you know, he just wants to leave, and they just let him leave pretty much and go back to WCW pretty much the next week.
Mm-hmm. He lets him leave, and then there's like multiple stories of like loans that McMahon has given to him in the past for, you know, his divorces and everything. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there.
It's hard for me to believe that Ric Flair would need to take a loan from someone.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, so they also had a whole thing planned, like Ric Flair Day in Minneapolis, and the big Target Center show, and then Flair ended up not being there. So, you know, that didn't help. So yeah, Bischoff and Flair are not on great terms at the moment. And then we do have one more piece of WWF news, where William Regal's coming in, but, you know, he still has his WCW contract that needs to run out, and he's got a non-compete, but they might be able to get that waived, and he's supposed to work Austin right away, but instead his original run goes pretty poorly.
Yeah, that something to wrestle with is so great. Like, the story of his meeting with Vince, I can't even imagine why they were like, okay, we'll still give him a shot. Like, it's amazing.
I guess Austin must have vouched for him pretty hard. I mean, because he's Austin's friend. He's Triple H's friend, obviously. So those are two guys, I guess, going really hard for him. But yeah, to, you know, fall asleep at the meeting and just be super hooked on GHB. And then I think once he does finally get in shape, he... like the man's man gimmick, he only works 3 or 4 matches with it and breaks his leg or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's not around for a long time, and they still stick with him. And I mean, you look at it now, it worked out. He's made it work. And, but yeah, it's really interesting to go back and listen to that though. Yeah. But I mean, that's about it in terms of news and stuff. We can get right into Raw if you guys want.
Sure.
Yeah, we can go right into Raw. That's fine.
The first Raw from the Wells Fargo Center.
Indeed, down in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Last week on April 6th from the On Center Complex in Syracuse, New York. I believe this Raw was taped. The major happenings were that the classic moment where Austin came out in a suit but then said that, you know, he wasn't going to change for anybody, and tapped Vince in the balls and made him fall and cry in pain. That was one thing that happened, as well as the main event of the New Age Outlaws and Triple H against the Disciples of Apocalypse. That was a thing.
I believe, main event anywhere in the world.
Yes. I believe also DX like urinated on DOA's bikes.
Yes, they did. Yes.
Yeah, and so obviously, so that's where we're on the heels of here. But this Raw is a bit more loaded. There's so many goddamn signs and posters at this Raw. It's insane to think about, but it's wild.
Yeah, you know, people love bringing signs and posters back then, man. And yeah,
they really did.
We've gotten away from that. I know we've gotten away from fans in general, but we've really gotten away from that. And
yes,
it's sad to see.
It is. So JR and Cole, they're out to begin the show for us, as is Stone Cold, who gets a crazy pop to start the show. Unsurprisingly, he's out to set some things straight. So Vince should get out there as well, or he'll sit in the ring and hold the show hostage. Something JR notes that he's done before. True. And Vince came out with Patterson and Briscoe, was hesitant to come down the ramp. And then some, you know, not cops, some rent-a-cops come with him. Vince said that he hasn't made up his mind about who's going to face Austin at the next pay-per-view, which Austin is not thrilled about. Vince says Austin will know soon enough, and Austin says that he knows that Vince can't stand him, and it seems like Vince wants to be the World Wrestling Federation champion himself. So he says that he's going to put the title on the line tonight against Vince, and he wants to know if he accepts the challenge, and says that they can do the things the easy way or the hard way, and Vince basically was trying to weasel out of it. He wanted to know the differences between the easy way and the hard way. And the easy way was to pick a ref and for him to fight Stone Cold. The hard way was for Stone Cold to take a cameraman to go to Vince's office and to beat his ass anyway. And then Vince has 30 minutes to decide.
So obviously it works out for them, but it's a little weird that Unforgiven is
in April? You know,
they have one more Raw after this, and then it's Unforgiven, and they don't have a title match set up yet. But
yeah,
I mean, obviously by the end of this night, they will, but you only have 1 week of build for it.
Well, to be fair, the previous week there was some build to it, where Foley had expressed animosity towards Austin by saying that the crowd was chanting for him and not for Foley anymore.
Also, they're entirely a TV company at this point.
Yes, so, that too.
You know,
yeah.
That's just kind of how things are at this point.
Indeed.
Yeah. I love the promo. It's great.
Yeah.
But also, like, commentary stays out of the way. They're pretty much silent throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, things that you don't see today is Austin is, like, pretty much, like, halfway to his back is half to the hard cam and half to the audience on the other side. So, like, they actually go to the other side and shoot him through the security guard's shoulders. Like, you don't see any different camera shots in the way things are today. It's just, like, so mind-boggling with all the technology, all the different creative things you could do, that we're just so stuck now in play to the hard cam, and that's it.
Yep.
Hey, well, yeah, and I think the presentation's been a lot of people's biggest flaw with WWE in the past few years, where it just all feels the same as it's felt for the past, you know, 15 years at this point.
Yeah, and there's this opening promo is great, and then the running bit throughout the show that we'll probably talk about, like, that is something we do not see nearly enough or at all going forward.
Yeah, and no, we'll get into that in a little bit, because I do have something that I want to kind of discuss about that whole concept. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then we come back from break, and Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe tell Vince that he has to face Austin tonight and finally put an end to all this. I thought that was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
And then we open with a chain match between DOA and Los Barriquas, which you don't see too many chain matches to open a show.
No, not in chain matches that don't get introductions either. Like,
yeah.
They're just right in the ring with chains already attached. Okay.
Yeah. And so DX comes out to cause a whole bunch of chaos, and we got chairs and chains, and becomes a no contest because DX won't stop beating up DOA. And the crowd wants LOD to come out, but they won't. And then Los Barriquas also get beat up by DX. So
yeah,
we're off and running here, which, by the way, you guys know who's writing Raw at this point. It's Vince Russo and Jim Cornette.
Oh, God. That explains the heavy influence that Cornette has on Raw, though.
You can kind of see the influence they both have, really.
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
for sure.
Just hilarious that that's your, like, two main writers at this moment.
Because they both fucking hate each other.
Yeah. Exactly. Shane tries to tell Vince that he should not actually face Stone Cold, which
this is a very early Shane appearance.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think he was he in the box with Tyson at the Rumble?
Yes. I think so.
Yes.
That's what I thought. I think that was one of his like first appearances too.
Well, because he handled pretty much all of the Tyson stuff off screen. So yeah, it makes sense that there's some carryover there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Shane says he shouldn't do it, but Patterson Briscoe is still trying to convince him.
Come back from break. Vince is to the ring. There's a tag match that's supposed to happen between the artist soon to be known as Too Cool and someone else. But Vince gets in the ring, goes on a spiel about how for over 50 years, the World Wrestling Federation has been part of his heritage, his grandfather to his dad to him. So he hopes it continues on with his son and daughter and their children and future generations, and that they've always been about honor and dignity and integrity, of which Stone Cold has none. And Vince has an answer to if he will face Dawson tonight in the ring. The answer is, oh, hell yeah. And then Patterson Briscoe came down the ramp and high-fived him, and JR is going to go talk to him because he thinks he's getting bad advice.
Well, he probably is, but
it's a very epic moment. I think Vince delivered that line extremely well.
Yeah. Then Undertaker comes out. He's not particularly happy because Kane and Paul Bearer desecrated his parents' graves last week, which you shouldn't do that.
No.
Too Cool are going to wrestle Aguila and Pantera, but Undertaker just beats up all four of them and calls Kane out instead. Michael Cole says that Undertaker shouldn't take it out on the four guys in the ring, which, you know, true. But Kevin Kelly shows us during the break when Shane got mad at Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe again, and Vince said that he's made his decision. JR says that he's agreed with Shane, and Vince tells JR to go do his job.
See, I like these segments. Like, this is something you don't see ever, because we always have to acknowledge that cameras are like, it's always, we have to have an interviewer back there to talk to them. We can't just like eavesdrop on anything, or like at least make it seem like they don't know what's going on or do anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Here, well, Vince, I don't think you should face old Stone Cold tonight.
That's a tough SOB.
We get Jeff Jarrett against Taka Michinoku. And during Jeff Jarrett's entrance, they have a bunch of flyers fall from the ceiling. So they're wrestling with a bunch of garbage in the ring.
That's so weird. And I actually like totally forgot that Tennessee Lee was even in here at this point.
Same here, honestly.
Yeah. It's a nice souvenir for everyone to take home, you know. Jeff Jarrett's making his singing debut at Unforgiven. So you can watch him sing. Club Kamikaze comes in and attacks Taka, and Jeff Jarrett loses via disqualification.
We got a good, if you listen carefully to the Philly crowd, you got a good BWO chant.
There you go.
While Club Kamikaze were out. So that was a highlight there. But yeah, the pamphlets were absolutely ridiculous.
Stone Cold's not surprised that Vince accepted his challenge because Stone Cold didn't really give him a choice.
This promo too, like, this is a good promo, but it's shot so differently. They're tight on Austin's face. Austin is just backstage with nobody there, sitting against a wall. Like, this would never play in today.
It should, but it never does, because they're so insistent on,
we need like seven different interviewers, you know, to make these guys, I guess, look bigger or something, instead of just having them look real.
Yeah. Well, also, like, you know, when Ali was doing like his videos on Twitter, he'd be all over Tropicana, and then they'd do the show and they'd still just be in the same spot in the concourse every time. It's like, you know, give us some new views and stuff.
Yeah, you have a whole arena, whole backstage. Do something different.
Gerald Briscoe showing Vince how to counter a stunner using Pat Patterson as an example.
This is so great.
It's really a great night for Patterson and Briscoe.
I love Briscoe. You catch the leg and then shoulder the knee. Shoulder the knee.
Farouk is here. Apparently he got beaten up by the Nation Domination last week, and The Rock is a leader now. Says that he knows Rock can see him and hear him right now. It's going to take a lot more than last week to keep him down. Gives Rock another chance to kick his ass right now, so come and do it. Rock says that Farouk doesn't call the shots. Rock can lay the smack down wherever he pleases, and Farouk can't do anything about it. And then Ken Shamrock and Steve Blackman come out, and even the odds for Farouk.
I like this only because this is very early iteration Rock, and he's just dropping all the famous lines before they become famous.
Yeah.
So it's a segment that really does very well in hindsight.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know what the thing is, and you know, this isn't a take that I don't think I'm alone in, but it feels like you are going to go back and watch Ricky Starks in 3 or 4 years from now and watch this run, and it's going to be the same sort of thing. He's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
He just, he seems to have it all down like The Rock did back then. And, you know, it's the intangible stuff you can't teach.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two things I liked on this too. The Rock shirt was amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of those great ones. And then Jim Ross mentioning before the promo that Austin and McMahon could happen at any time. Like, that's it's just reminiscent of like the people trying to get you to keep on the channel, don't turn away to WCW. Like,
yeah.
I like those little things looking back at it now.
Yeah. No, that's great. We get Terry Funk needs a new partner because Cactus Jack has
walked out
on him. So his new partner is Too Cold Scorpio.
Also something that I thought was a nice play in Philadelphia for obvious reasons, as evident by the ECW chant that soon followed.
Yeah. Also the fact that it's Flash Funk and Terry Funk.
Well, yeah, of
they're brothers.
So they're facing the Quebecers, which not the original Quebecers. I think it's PCO and
yes,
the other Rougeau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Too Cold gets the win with the 450 splash.
This was a nice, yeah. This was a nicely booked segment that played off of the crowd, and it was smart for them to do it.
Yeah,
it made at the time it made all the sense in the world.
Exactly. We're switching gears to the War Zone. So Jerry Lawler's here now, and Luna's out. She's calling out Sable because they're going to meet at Unforgiven. Goldust comes out dressed as Sable, but then the real Sable come out and she and Luna fight, and I was a little confused why it opens the second hour, but Sable's probably the second biggest attraction in the company after Austin at the moment, so
yeah, well, without question,
you know
that. And they're also trying to rip each other's shirts off, so that's probably why too.
Well, yeah, so if you're at the top of the hour flipping through and you see that, then
exactly, you know, you're also in the you're in the adult hour of
Of
Raw. Yeah.
We move on to Steve Blackman, Ken Shamrock against Bart Gunn and Bob Holly.
The new Midnights.
Yes, the NWA tag titles.
Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart.
Yeah.
The next week, because I watched the next week also, because I got a little hooked, Cornette was like, I didn't name them, the girls did.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was mistaking Bob Holly or Bart Gunn for Bobby Eaton in either of these guys. I know we like to throw that around in 2021 that everybody's the next Bobby Eaton, but nobody was doing that in 1998.
No.
I'm trying to think. Someone called one of the released guys last week the new Bobby Eaton. I'm trying to remember who it was.
Wesley Blake.
Yes.
Wesley Blake. I don't know who called him that, but Wesley Blake is now the new Bobby Eaton.
No.
He's about like the 30th now new Bobby Eaton. So there's apparently like 35 Bobby Eatons out there in the world of pro wrestling.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But no, I liked the stare down. I don't even know if we ever got the match between Shamrock and Severin. And I don't think it would have been great, but at least it would have been different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they really don't care about the NWA tag champs and all that at this point. Like, it's clear. Nope.
Much like today, nobody cares about the NWA.
Yeah. So we get a double disqualification. And so this is where, because this match was boring. So I was like, you know, let's take a break. Let's talk about the Attitude Era in general. Because, you know, a lot of it's based in nostalgia, obviously, because it's when a lot of people started watching wrestling, but they told better cohesive stories that kind of overlap throughout the night and throughout, you know, weeks on end. And then, you know, it had shorter matches and the Ruthless Aggression era kind of shifted back towards the middle. And now it's more, you know, you get 10 or 15 minute matches and maybe not the best story. So it's like, is there a medium that you can find somewhere? Should they go back, or should they just keep doing what they're doing now? Because you have another hour of TV to fill, so the matches have to be longer.
I mean, I think you can find some sort of happy medium, but I just think that the presentation is so different. The way they want to go about telling stories is so different that you're not going to find, you're never going to tap back into this for obvious reasons. But like, yeah, it's just, you're so far past this that you can't go back.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess the other thing, I don't know if you guys saw the Chris Jericho Broken Skull sessions, but he's like, you know, when I started compared to now, there's so many more people in creative. Like, is that part of the problem too, where it's just too many kind of hands in the fire there?
I don't know, because like, on one hand, I could guess you can make the argument, but on the other hand, some of the people in wrestling definitely need to be like reined in and need mm-hmm. to have their ideas be reined in and whatnot. So it's like you definitely need some buffers in there for sure.
Yeah, but, and I think too, like part of it is not maybe so much how many people are in creative, but what ideas go to who, and like, you know, who does, especially for WWE, is who does Vince, what stories does Vince want to go with? Because I mean, I think one of the better stories that they told in the past few years was Mandy and Sonya,
mm-hmm.
And that yeah. little thing, and that was all a person in creative who, you know, outside of, you know, wrestling, who made that story, and Mandy and Otis and everything. So I think it's just I think creative people who are outside of wrestling can help, but I think it's definitely the filter, just like it was in the Attitude Era. The filter has to do a better job of selection.
Agreed. And I mean, even like, even something as simple of a story as what they're doing with The Rock and Farouk in the last two episodes, they had the Nation of Domination beat him up in an alley or a parking lot or whatever. They broke them, you know, they hurt his ribs. He comes out there, ribs taped up and whatnot, cuts a passionate babyface promo. The heels come out looking ready to do damage. The face has smartened up, gotten himself some allies, and they did a big brawl, and it popped the crowd. I mean, that's so easy to do, and like, I don't remember the last time something like that was ever done. And it's so simple. You don't have to be like, oh yeah, this has been done before. So what? It's effective.
Yeah. And I also, I mean, looking back at the first sort of run of NXT when it was, you know, the network, you know, first mm-hmm. opened, I mean, that whole first couple of years, I mean, that's great storytelling throughout there. And you have people like Ryan Ward was like the head dude down there for that time. And then you have people that are in wrestling, like Road Dogg and his SmackDown run, like that got high praise. I don't know. I think they should probably be a little bit more loose on things, but I mean, until somebody is not there running things, it's not going to change.
Well,
they probably should a little bit, but
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's the thing, because you can change it up a little bit. Like, the TV contracts aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, TV contracts aren't going anywhere. you are set right now for 5 years. And in 5 years' time, I realistically don't see much changing in terms of how the product is presented.
No, absolutely not. So it's like, I don't know, I was just thinking, because it's like, it's not like the Attitude Era stuff is, I don't want to say it's not good. It hasn't aged well, a lot of it. And a lot of that's just because of, you know, how culture has evolved in 20 years or whatever. But, mm-hmm. you know, can you still do that sort of thing, but in a 2020 PG format?
I think conceptually, yes, but not some of the stuff that they were doing in practice.
Well, yeah. No, yeah, I mean, but it's different too, because you had, you know, people desperately hanging. I mean, there were 12 million people watching wrestling every week, so you could do pretty much anything and they'd still be there.
True. That's so true, but you also have guaranteed TV contracts, so you know, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And,
you know, I don't know. I think it's interesting seeing, like, even going through the show, like, people would probably have high praise because of the Austin McMahon stuff, but like, do I really need to sit through this Midnight Express, Steve Blackman, Ken Shamrock stuff?
No.
Like, am I really going to praise this, or am I going to praise the the chain match that went for 2 minutes and 56 seconds or whatever it was.
Well,
and ended with the DX doing that. And
no, you know. I mean, and I get where you're coming from, but it's, I guess, continuing a story at least. Like, what are they doing with, just for example, you know, Cedric and Shelton against the Viking Raiders every week? Is that just a match that's happening at this point, or is that going to go somewhere?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it is a little tough. I know I don't want to give them too much benefit of the doubt, but they are extremely shorthanded, and that's showing in every show right now.
Oh, yeah.
So they sometimes they have no choice.
That's fair. But no, I thought it was interesting though, just kind of compare and contrast. We're the first podcast to ever do that, so
yeah.
Well, it's interesting too though, but like you look at Raw tonight or SmackDown tonight when we were recording this, and I thought that they told a pretty good story with their whole 2 hours from start to finish.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, like, it can be done. I don't think it gets done on a consistent basis, but it can be done in today's wrestling, but it's few and far between. Yeah. And I don't know if it'll ever go back. I think the wrestling's a lot better than it was, you know, 24 years ago.
And no, that's the other side. Like, just athletically, they're all so much better. Like, you want to showcase that. So yeah. I get that.
But now you have time to. Like, it's not like, I don't think you have to sacrifice, and especially with the third hour of Raw, you don't have to sacrifice match time. Like, you could have a 2 hour, you know, this 2 hour Raw, if you just expanded the match times by, you know, 4 minutes a piece on this show, you would still get to your 3 hours and still have all the story that just happened. So you don't have to sacrifice it, but you know, it's hard to do when you probably have somebody who you turned a script into on Friday and he tore it up 2 hours before showtime.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Undertaker comes out again. This time Kane comes out with Paul Bearer. Paul wants to know why Undertaker can't wait till Unforgiven to get to Kane, but next week on Raw, Undertaker will face Kane, not in the ring. It'll be in the cemetery on top of his parents' graves.
JR in this said one of the funniest damn lines I've ever heard. He's like, oh, what a hideous thing to say to a human being.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, that was comically over the top and very JR, especially for that era. almost like him calling Paul Bearer the rotund demon.
That is great. We get Owen Hart against Billy Gunn, and Owen's challenging any member of DX tonight because he's facing Triple H at Unforgiven.
And they said that Billy Gunn got the win because he won an essay contest.
No, Triple H and X-Pac are great on commentary here.
Yeah, yes, they are. They're tremendous. I know Triple H being like, well, I don't know what's going on, but if Vince gives me money, I have his back.
Oh, X-Pac buries Jim Ross by asking if Owen was a 12-time All-American.
LOD 2000 come to the ring with Owen, which that's unfortunate, but you know. And Owen wins with a roll-up out of nowhere. Match is very fun. And
yes.
You know, just leaves you thinking what we lost with Owen not getting, you know, a few more years out of him. I mean, obviously, you know, the real life loss too, but just from a wrestling standpoint.
Well, you know, just... as rumor has had it, you know, he was supposed to get the game gimmick, and that would have been very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always think back of, like, if Shawn would have worked Owen instead of Undertaker at, what was that, right before Mania? Instead, when Owen came back as the Blackheart, like, how much would have changed? Because Shawn doesn't get hurt then.
Yeah.
Owen's probably on a different trajectory. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's still everything happens, but it's crazy.
It's a bummer, though, because, I mean, you know, Kurt Angle comes in, you know, the Radicals come in, all of the SmackDown guys in a couple years, Jericho comes in. It just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But we're done with commercials for the night, so Vince gets the full Hogan Goldberg entrance from the back with his crew of Gerald Briscoe, Pat Patterson, Sergeant Slaughter. And then it's time for our match.
Yes, so Vince gets a microphone before the match starts, and he brings up Stone Cold said that he could beat Vince with one arm tied behind his back. So let's see if that he's a man of his word. Vince pulled the rope out and Austin's arm was tied behind his back. Bell is about to ring. However, Dude Love comes out. He wants to know why we can't all just get along. And he went to put the mandible claw on Vince, but Austin broke it up and Dude put the claw on him instead. And the match was never able to start. It was ruled a no contest. Yeah, and then at the extra attitude segment, Dude Love headed to the back. As Austin got untied, DX met Austin on the stage and started beating him up. Kane came out to help, but LOD 2000 and The Undertaker came out to even the odds. Turns into an impromptu match. Babyfaces win to send the crowd not happy. Austin got on the mic and called Vince a chicken shit bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with being a TV company is that your big matches never actually happen.
Yes.
Only a few do.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
But that was Raw.
Yes, that was an historic episode of Monday Night Raw. And let's now move on to the following week for Nitro from Colorado Springs, Colorado on 420.
Oh, by the way, I'm not sure if this makes what happened at Spring Stampede and then on this Nitro make more sense or less sense, but Randy Savage has a torn ACL.
He does.
Makes less sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense in the sense of what Savage has to do at the end, but like, I could have a whole 30-minute rant on what they did with Sting.
Oh, by all means.
Oh my God. Like, Sting's been there for 4 months. You built up like 18 months on Sting coming back, winning the title. Like, even the win is so messed up at Starrcade. And then he loses it in like 4 months, like 3 months into his reign or whatever it is. It's just WCW. Like, they just had no idea what they were doing. And Bischoff's like whole thing, like, cause one of his 83 weeks is like one of the early ones is on this whole Starrcade Sting thing. And he's like, yeah, he wasn't tan enough. What the hell is that? Oh, I can't, I don't know. Can't do it.
So last night at Spring Stampede, we had a couple matches that stood out. Goldberg and Perry Saturn for 8 minutes, which that's a little long.
Yeah.
Hogan and Nash beating Roddy Piper and the Giant in a baseball bat on a pole tag match.
And Raven Russo wasn't even there yet.
Yeah, exactly. Raven winning the U.S. title from DDP and Randy Savage beating Sting for the World Heavyweight title with the help of Kevin Nash.
Yep.
Crazy.
So we're underway. Tony Schiavone, Larry Zbysko, and Mike Tenay, they discuss how Nash helped beat Sting for the title last night. Hogan wasn't happy about it.
But they wouldn't show this full footage because you need to buy the replay on pay-per-view tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know what my thing is about that? Is that if you're going to undo the two title changes on this show, you're not going to get too many people to buy the pay-per-view replay.
No, you're not. You're just not.
That's a really good point. I never even didn't even think of that, but yeah.
You're hustling backwards there.
Yeah. You're really hoping nobody watched Nitro and just ordered that Tuesday replay before.
Yeah. Hogan and Bischoff are here. The man I call the immoral Hulk Hogan. Bischoff says he can't stand what happened last night. Hogan says they stole the title, made the fans sick. The crowd thinks that Hogan sucks, and they are correct.
They are.
Bischoff calls Kevin Nash a midget, which...
Okay.
It's strange. And Hogan challenges Savage for the title later tonight.
Indeed. And then after the break, Randy Savage comes out. He says that he hates Hulk Hogan because Randy Savage rules. Randy's on live TV and can say whatever he wants and no one can stop him. Wasn't this the premise of an episode of 30 Rock?
Yes. There's whole 30 Rock where Tracy learns what breaking is. Kevin Nash is the new leader of the NWO. That's Randy's big news that he has for everybody. So last night was the first step of the end of Hogan's career. He can no longer call the NWO his. Tonight, Randy will make that final when he retains his title. You know, they're lucky the NWO theme is so good since,
oh my God,
20 people have it.
Yes, I made a note. We are 24 minutes in. The NWO theme music is played 4 times. It's crazy.
So I'm so sad the B team music doesn't play on the show.
Also, in the first hour of this show, there's not much wrestling.
Well, yeah. I mean, no.
But I get that. You're trying to set it up. you know, so the wrestling starts when Raw starts.
I think in the first hour, the only thing that's as non-NWO is Barbarian versus Wayne Bloom. Everything else is NWO for like the whole first hour.
Yeah. And the Raven promos.
Yes, we get Raven cutting a promo on Goldberg.
Yes, and the multiple backstage visits of Goldberg warming up. Yes.
Yes.
Raven is cutting all of his promos tonight from the floor of a bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds about right for Raven. Yeah.
You know. Mean Gene plugs the hotline, and then we are finally getting a match where Chris Adams is facing K-Dog.
I'd rather have a promo.
You know, we didn't have to do this match. We could have just kept not having matches because it wasn't very good. I mean, Chris Adams has cool tights with the UK flag on them, but
yeah. I will say, since you shared with me that website that they had compiled like all the contracts.
Yeah.
I went through and looked at like pretty much put like dollar amounts next to the guys' names. So this is a pretty cheap match. So Conan's only making $391K this year. Vincent's only at 112, and he's got a couple of times he's in there tonight. And Chris Adams makes $75,000 for the year. So they're getting their money's worth at least.
Yeah.
Awesome. So Conan makes him tap. Then we cut to some Clemson students who convince the university to host a watch party at the football stadium because wrestling actually used to be kind of cool.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the Nitro party scene was a big deal back then.
I remember in 99, I think. Yeah, 99. So Jericho's debut, because I was at that show. But I remember like going to school like the next day and like we would all talk about it. Like it was a big thing back in, well, this is elementary school though for me. But like we were like, there's a lot of fans. Like it is crazy how that does change when you're growing up, like how unpopular it got.
Yeah, because then when I got back into it by like 2003, I was in what, third or fourth grade, and had like two or three kids that I knew watched it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, because I mean, like we would talk about, you know, pay-per-views. I remember I went to like a Raw taping, so we had like Raw, I think a SmackDown, and like even their B shows and stuff, and like I would tell them, like I would tell the friends in the neighborhood who, like, you know, all the matches that were going to happen and stuff, and they would tape things out of order, so some things wouldn't show up on, you know, the right order that I said. But yeah, it was very different times.
Yeah. So we keep going against the Barbarian against Wayne Bloom, which I kind of forgot Wayne Bloom ever worked in WCW.
Yeah. This is like not his first stint either in WCW.
I only remember him pretty much from the Beverly Brothers, where they almost killed that guy.
Oh yeah. That's a great gift.
Barbarian gets a win pretty quickly. So, you know,
yeah.
Raven cuts another promo from the floor of a public washroom in which he says that he's nasty. Well, I mean, yes. You're sitting on the floor of a bathroom, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also the fourth combined between Goldberg and Raven to hype up their match. So they're definitely trying to put that over.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho's here with a picture of Dean Malenko. Says good news, bad news. Dean retired from pro wrestling, but the good news is he has a job interview tomorrow at a burger joint. That's nice.
Yeah.
Then we get Jericho against Juventud Guerrera. And
I wonder what the reason why is that Jericho's WCW theme is not on the network.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like pretty much forever they've just dubbed over.
Yeah,
with the, because I don't think he had like an actual composed theme. The well, work always was that they used like a stadium rock.
Yeah, it was just like an instrumental.
Because it was song. Because it was like Even Flow by Deep Purple or whatever.
Okay.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah, it was a riff off that, just like DDP's was a riff off of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Well, DDP's theme is on there though.
No, it's not.
Oh, is it not?
No, it's the dubbed version of it. It's not the Self High Five one.
Oh, okay.
Because it probably, I guess, sounds too similar, and they didn't.
Well, it does.
It does. It legitimately. No, the Even Flow stuff for Jericho, there was a bit of a difference, but the Self High Five one, that is literally the instrumental. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same one.
Yeah.
There's the only thing that's different is just that it's a self high five and then all the other stuff in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Jericho and Juventud have a good match, like you'd expect. Probably should have got a little more time. And Juventud passed out in the Lion Tamer.
Mm-hmm.
So I love this. I love Jericho after the match. He goes, "Oh God, I killed Hoovy." But I also thought too, like Jericho, he's sort of like, you know how like we get certain wrestlers now where they do like the collector gimmick, where it's like, oh, I'm going to collect all these titles. But I really like Jericho. He's got Hoovy's mask. He got Prince Iaukea's clothes and Malenko's title. Like, it's just a different take on a character where it's like, yeah, I'm going to go and take these personal things from you guys. We never get that anymore. It's always just titles.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now we move on to Goldberg versus Raven and Raven's rules for the WCW United States Championship. Michael Buffer's here, so you know it's a big deal.
Do you think they had to pay him twice for this?
They might have.
I hope so. Just...
Like, he has to, right? Because otherwise, why wouldn't you just have him do every introduction?
Exactly, yeah.
He's like, hey, you know, $125,000 per appearance means per appearance.
Per like 10 words or whatever, yeah. Per ready to rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is obviously a very great match. One of Goldberg's best matches in WCW by far.
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, if you've somehow never seen this match and you're tuning into this, mm-hmm, please watch it because it's an incredible piece of business.
Yeah, yeah, and the crowd is so into it too.
Oh, they're so into it.
Goldberg busts out his new reverse kick for the first time, which will always be fine and never hurt anyone.
Never,
so.
Yeah.
He can just do it. It's fine. Raven does a drop toe hold onto a chair, which always looks like it had to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is always close to like, if did the guy get their hands up or not?
The flock comes in and Goldberg takes them all out, including jackhammering the really big guy.
Yeah, Reese.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, probably can't do that anymore.
No. You know, you think? Not at 54.
Raven gets speared and jackhammered, and Goldberg is your new United States champion.
Yeah. So this is great. I love it. It's so good. I like to, like, as much as I rag on the Buffer for doing his introductions, the introduction for Goldberg is hometown unknown, his weight unknown, his record we all know. Like, that's just great. That's clever and great.
It really is.
We move on to La Parca against Ultimo Dragon. Eddie comes down the ramp with Chavo against Chavo's will, and he tells Chavo to sneak in and attack Ultimo. He does it. La Parca gets the win.
I really do love this dynamic with Eddie and Chavo.
Oh yeah.
It's tremendous.
Chris Benoit's facing Kurt Hennig, which once upon a time would have been a very good match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All three guys gone too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. Benoit gets Hennig in the crossface and Rick Rude breaks it up for the DQ. Then Booker T comes to help Benoit, but Benoit doesn't want help and they brawl.
Yes.
Mean Gene's in the ring to interview Roddy Piper, who has a biography coming out this week on
A&E. Yeah, good. And Piper said that they were in the home of the Denver Broncos. Technically true, not in Colorado Springs, however.
Yeah. You know, he lost to Hogan last night in a bat match, and since Hogan made his night misery last night, Piper's returning the favor tonight. The title match is no disqualification. There'll be no run-ins because Hogan has no friends.
Yeah. Right.
And if Hogan tries to get counted out, he's being dragged back to the ring, but he's also a challenger, so why would he try and get counted out?
Yeah.
Get a hammer against Perry Saturn, and they just fight to the back for double count out.
So weird. Like, they take some bumps in here that were just like, why are you doing these? Like, they are so hard. I'm just like, man, all this for a double count out match? Like, man, I don't know.
Yeah, you guys have your guaranteed contracts. You don't have to work that hard.
You're not gonna, like, this match was gonna get you any praise from the back anyways. Maybe they just didn't like each other. Maybe it was a shoot.
Yeah, that's true. We move on to Public Enemy against Buff Bagwell and Scott Steiner. Buff Bagwell and Scott Steiner get the victory. Yeah. You know, kind of is what it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Public Enemy didn't want to go up for many of these suplexes, and Steiner was just like, I'm just going to throw you anyways.
I like Tony Schiavone continuing to hammer home the point that maybe there's dissension in the ranks because Buff and Scott were both admiring their muscles. Heenan's a riot in this match, by the way. He's a riot for the whole hour.
Oh yeah.
I mean he's incredible.
Move on to Booker T against Psychosis and another match that very good. Could have got some more time. Booker wins with a missile dropkick.
Yeah, so. Psychosis like is just a bumping fool in this match.
Too. Oh yeah.
Like, and that missile dropkick, like he just takes such a great looking bump too.
Yeah, it's really a bummer because we're coming up on their debut in 2005 on the other show, and it just they're so good, but they just give them such a poor gimmick.
You think?
Yeah. Psychosis, like I loved Psychosis's look, like because he's super tall compared to like all the other cruiserweights, and then like his mask, especially his mask, like it was so unique and cool, and yeah, never got that in WWF, unfortunately.
Lex Luger's facing Bryan Adams.
And not the singer?
No, not the singer. Tony spends some time discussing how Nitro is the king of cable and set the standard for professional wrestling, which a lot of this sounds like it's coming right from Eric Bischoff. And Bobby Heenan makes sure to note that as time goes on, it's going to get better and better here.
Not so right about that.
And Luger gets the win.
Indeed. Then we go into our main event. Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage for the World Heavyweight Championship. Heenan went on a really strong diatribe about Hogan and how he hates him before this match, I believe.
That, you know what? Heenan continuing to hate Hogan and in WCW is good stuff.
It really is just good shit.
You love that continuity.
I hate all the people that are like, oh, he ruined Hogan's turn. Like
he would have
questioned Hogan anyways, even if Hogan was a good guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, that was perfectly on brand for Heenan to do that.
Yeah. Michael Buffer is back, so that's unfortunate, but you know. I wonder did he just sit around all day? I mean, is that what he does pretty much in boxing too? Just kind of sits around all day until his 30 seconds of work?
Probably.
Yeah, he probably gets his own dressing room. Like, I would not be surprised if that's in his contract. So he probably just hangs out there.
He has to remember someone's name and their height and weight and where they're from, and that's it.
Oh yeah, I don't even think he does that. He just has to read it off a card. That's true. Remember it.
That's a good point. Good work if you can get it, man.
Oh yeah, no knocking that.
I was wondering if this would be as good as the WrestleMania 5 match, which isn't even all that good, but
oh yeah,
you know. And I mean, you knew when they made it no disqualification, something dumb was going to happen.
We just had three members of the NWO come out during a Bryan Adams match. We didn't think, how many do you think you were going to get for a Hogan's match?
And I mean, like they needed to do something big in response to getting beat by Raw, and because, Savage's leg was messed up apparently, which I didn't know until earlier today, but that match at Uncensored is not very good and you're going to run it back. Like, I don't know, man. Maybe you just keep the title on Sting and run Sting Hogan tonight.
It's just so bad. It's like, all right, we need to do, because we still need to break up the NWO into the two factions of NWO. So get the title off Sting, put it on Macho, and then we can get it back to Hogan and do the split. And then, Kevin Nash is going to be the leader, so we can write Macho off too. It's just all so much for you had Sting all made. And you just fumbled it the whole time. There's not one thing they did right after the bell rang at Starrcade with Sting. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how that's a guy you managed to screw up.
I just can't imagine how you put like 16, 18 months into that. And it's just like, yeah, we just fumbled it. He didn't have a tan. His head wasn't into it. It's like, okay.
Savage hit the elbow, but he couldn't cover because he landed on his knee, which had been targeted. Hogan put Savage in a figure four, but there's a rope break, even though it's a no disqualification match. The Disciple hits a neck breaker on Nick Patrick, who really, I mean, it's a no disqualification match, and Nick Patrick had really trying to be breaking things up, and you don't need to do that in that sort of match. I kind of deserved it. You know, shout out to the Disciple.
Yeah.
Your friend. Your
exactly. Friend. Kevin Nash comes out to even the odds, but Bischoff holds Nash's leg, and the Disciple holds Nash so Hogan can hit him with the title. But Nash moves, and the Disciple gets hit. Then Hogan gets a powerbomb, puts Savage on top, or Nash puts Savage on top of him. Bret Hart comes out, hits Nash with the title, and puts Hogan on top of Savage instead. So, right off the bat, you shouldn't have a situation where Bret Hart is helping Hulk Hogan win the title.
Yeah.
No. You should not.
Like, I get not caring about their history, but that's a pretty big thing to overlook.
Another person you fumble right off the bat with.
Too. Yeah. Literally.
Like, could you just make WCW not be such losers and like give them somebody to put, you know, to put in front? I mean, I know they get DDP, but like, could they not get a good second person for them?
And the Bret one's crazy because, I mean, he should be a slam dunk for you pretty much all through 1998 based on what he came off of.
Exactly.
You know, and they just can't get out of their own way.
It's like they just like, I mean, I understand why they signed him. You know, he's a big name. You're going to have another show with Thunder starting. Like, you need more people, but it's just like how you're utilizing them within the stories that are going on. Like, he doesn't need to be in this NWO, you know, stuff that's going on. You're splitting the NWO, and now we're adding more people to one side so that they can take to the other side. It's just so much, and it's just all the same.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I can see why Raw starts winning, because if you're tired of the NWO, there's a punishing amount of the NWO on this show, and it's 2 years in, so a lot of people are probably getting sick of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, we're going to split them, and then on the other side, you've got, on, you know, the WWF side, you're getting, you know, Austin McMahon, and you're getting this cool new person, like this cool guy running the show and being that anti-hero for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, they obviously try to do it with Goldberg and they find some success with that, but it's different, you know, like Goldberg takes down Hogan, but I don't know. Like, you can kind of see why WCW kind of failed, because they don't capitalize on what they should.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, they don't. No.
Yeah, I think that's it. Unless you guys have anything else.
No, that's about it.
No, that's it for me.
And I believe next month we decided we're kind of sticking in this same era. Yes.
Yeah, we are. Next month we are going to be looking over Slamboree 1997. For two specific reasons that involve people who were not involved in the, well, technically not involved in the wrestling business because they were football players.
Yeah. Yeah, Reggie.
We got Reggie White and Kevin Green. And, you know, also Steve McMichael gets involved. You know, shout out to Steve McMichael, who's going through a lot of stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, really sorry to hear that. Hoping he is able to make the best of it as best as you can with something like that.
Yeah. Very, very sad, tragic news.
But yeah.
No, I mean, wow. I'm actually just catching wind of that. That really sucks.
Yeah, no, it's real. It's been real sad. It's been all over the news up here today. You know, but yeah. And then what was the other one? Over the Edge 1998.
Yeah, Over the Edge 98 has one of my favorite, if not my favorite, WWF title match from 1998 and also 1999, because 1999 sucked. That being Austin versus Dude Love, which I think is a phenomenal piece of business.
Yeah, that'll be
fun. It's also in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah. It's at the Mecca. It's like one of the last, I think, WWF shows up there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at the Mecca.
I did not go to that show. but I wish I would have. But yeah, no, it's definitely a good show. I probably have not watched that show in like, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah, it's exciting. I've never seen either of those, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can find me, of course, at Chris M. Novak. You can find Rob at Robert O'Neill 31. You can follow Chris at Hitman 99. As always, just to plug everything, you can go to patreon.com/barberschairnetwork. That's where you can find the $5 subscription and the $10 subscription for the Patreon. You can get early access to all the podcasts going on. You know, there's some new and recent episodes coming out this week. And over the past week, we'll have a new Ruthless Aggression for you probably on Sunday or Monday. We're recording tomorrow afternoon, that being Saturday afternoon. We're going to be doubling up on some 2005 shows, including two that I went to and one that Rob went to, which I think is really funny because his first TV show was on taped on April the 12th, aired on April 14th, and my first TV show came on April 18th at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
So those will be you'll probably get some nice anecdotes there, and I think Rob has a nugget to share about the Rosemont SmackDown, but we'll save that for then. So yeah, as always, keep subscribing, keep listening, and you know, we'll be back next month for those two retro review podcasts here on the Barbershare Network.